I am, headliner in one of the biggest nightclubs in the country, and I wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning in this star suite, all by myself. Yeah, that's what I said, all. But I did what I've always done, man, to cheer myself up. I picked up my guitar, sat down, wrote me a little song. Now this is how it feels to be alone at the top of the hill, trying to figure out why. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can.
It's hard to be humble, isn't it, Max?
It is a struggle sometimes.
Look, I hear that song pretty regular on that radio station you and I both listen to.
Yep.
And now that I've come to know you, I can't help but think of you when I hear that song.
That's a compliment. I'll be honest.
We've got Boji Wood on the line. Boji, do you concur that Max is the epitome of that song?
Well, I was thinking that was my theme song that y'all were bringing me in on.
Sam's coming along now, Boji.
Yeah,
It won't be long. He'll be in that same category.
Yeah, and you know, of course, Mac Davis was my favorite quarterback in North Dallas 40. Seth Maxwell, he led the Bulls there to right there at the edge of the championship game. Fumbled extra point, and the Bulls are in the Super Bowl. So yeah, I love that song.
I do too. All right, let's talk a little little football. You got to explain to me about Kelly Dillingham.
I knew this was coming. Listen, I all I can tell you is this, is that Gus has finally got the offensive coordinator of his dreams, is somebody that's just going to sit back and say, yes, Gus, that sounds great. So that is all that I can figure out on this, Max, because, I mean, obviously he's a young coach. He is the he was the youngest coordinator in Division I. Now he's the youngest coordinator in the Southeastern Conference. But the thing about it is he's really not going to be the offensive coordinator. He's not going to call plays. Cody Burns is going to be the pass game coordinator. And Gus very publicly has said that he is going to call plays. So, Max, yep. I really can't tell you. There is no rhyme or reason to this thing. But I know one thing, 2019 is going to be thrive or die for Gus Malzahn.
See, Max, Boji's on my side. He understands. This doesn't make any sense.
See, here's I already got this one figured out, but I'm going to tell you, all these one-year guys, this time next year, regardless, unless they win the national championship, I'm saying there will be a complete overhaul of that program by saying that Gus Malzahn agreed to a much less buyout because he wanted one more year at $7 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, the fan base, you know, this basically the fan base has already turned on him. And they've turned on the athletic department and the whole Sardinia. How does a coaching staff tell a young man that he's going to be redshirted and play him in 5 ball games? Now, tell me that.
Well, of course, Asa Martin is transferring and – according to what I've been told, it's not necessarily because of they burned the transfer accidentally. He just doesn't feel good about the direction of the program. Neither does his parents.
Right.
Max, there's not.
I think that played a part in it, though.
Yeah, well, I was going to say there's not a lot of the main thing about this though with the parents is they got 3 different messages from 3 different coaches.
Right.
It's an unnamed assistant coach. But we can just surmise that that's got to be running backs coach Tim Horton. But his parents have not come out and named him. But there's no reason for them to talk to any other assistant coach than Tim Horton, besides Chip Lindsey, who was the offensive coordinator until just a few weeks ago. And then, of course, they talked to Gus about it. And they got 3 different messages from 3 different coaches. And the crazy thing about it is Max, I think they would have had an actual basis for their appeal had he just played in five games, and they were counting that Arkansas game, because, you know, he actually didn't play in that Arkansas game. As crazy as that sounds, he was in for a play, but the play was never snapped.
That's right. I did remember that.
Right. And so,
all that, though, to me, mm-hmm. from the outside looking in, Boji just marks down as a mass confusion on that campus right now in the athletic department, and nobody seems to understand where all the direction has come from up to now and who makes the decisions.
That's correct. First of all, nobody at Auburn wanted to have egg on their face for a $32 million buyout after less than a year after signing that contract. I do know that for a fact. If they wanted to buy him out right now, the money is there. And you're right, there were concessions made actually on both sides for Gus to have this extra year. And I look at it, and again, you know, I have a strong affinity for the Tigers and of course for my time down there as a GA under Coach Dye. But this thing is just a train wreck waiting to go off the tracks. And I think this time next year we're going to be looking at the same thing. We're going to be looking at somewhere between, 7-5 and maybe 9-3. And I don't even know if 9-3 is going to keep his job next year. If it's not, because if those three again end up being LSU, Georgia, and Alabama, that's not going to be good enough for him next year.
Yep. Boji, I got a question for you real quick. We had an Ole Miss guy on our morning show this morning said he had an inside source in Oxford that said Hugh Freeze had never actually interviewed for any of these high-profile jobs that the rumors were flying around for, namely Auburn and Tennessee. Do you know whether or not that actually happened or if it was all smoke and mirrors from the Auburn end?
From this end, from what I know, that Gus wanted Hugh Freeze to come in. I do know that. But as far as actually interviewing, from what I've been told that that there were powers that be at Auburn told Gus right up front that is not going to happen. And from what I was told, the powers that be were told from the powers that be in Birmingham that no, this is not going to happen right now.
I think a lot of that, where I kind of picked up on it early, long before Gus got involved, was when he was putting, someone was putting the word out about Nick Saban, interviewed him per se. The first thing I said, that sounds like an agent remark that keep floating out there trying to get Hugh Freeze a job in the Southeastern Conference. And I think we all knew that it may come down the road, but not after just a couple of years for all the, all the things that were that he was charged with, from everything from players to, escort services or whatever. That was just that was a conglomerate of character issues, basically along with coaching issues.
Max, from what I was told at the Alabama situation, that Nick Saban indeed wanted to bring in Hugh Freeze as an analyst, much as like he did Butch Jones. And that the powers that be in Birmingham said, no, this is not going to happen right now. Because you and I both know that Nick Saban, he's not worried about public perception or anything like that. And one thing that he looked at was that, number one, that Hugh Freeze was not going to be actually coaching on the field. He wasn't going to be recruiting and those type things. And I think that's the way that Saban justified things in his mind. But by Saban's own admission, he understands that he looks at things differently than most everyone else. And as Terry Saban says, Nick thinks that there's just an inch chasm between him and everyone else. He doesn't realize there's a Grand Canyon chasm between the way he sees things and the way everyone else sees things.
So, Boji, do you think this hire of Kenny Dillingham was just a way to save a buck for the impending buyout that was going to take place presumably next year?
Yeah, because if you look at the contract, from what I've heard, I've not seen the final contract, but from what I've heard, the articles of agreement basically come down to the fact, you know, there was no two-year deals anymore. Auburn is not going to enter into any more multi-year coaching contracts with assistant coaches. And, of course, Kenny Dillingham has a two-year deal, but if you look at it, the actual guaranteed income is less than what Chip Lindsey was making per 1 year. So, you know, that's kind of smoke and mirrors saying, oh, well, no, we've got a two-year deal with this offensive coordinator, but at the same time, the compensation is less than what Chip Lindsey was making in 1 year.
You two guys are both former assistant coaches. That can't sound enticing to you two, right? A one-year deal no matter what?
But no, when we came along, wait a minute, let me clarify that. When we came along, I don't know about you, Bojie, every assistant job I ever had, the last two, I guess, I had contracts, but they were 1 year anyway.
Okay.
And if you got a chance to go from a GA to a position coach and got $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 raise, you'd run to town and back.
Yep.
To try to get the check cash. You know, thinking somebody's trying to pull one over on you. I mean, it was an economic thing, the difference between us and what happened today.
Yeah, and I had the last couple of jobs that I had, they were multi-year deals. And I thought that I was a Rockefeller at that standpoint. But, of course, Max, and I've told you this many times, I thought I'd made it big when I got a monthly check that had a comma in it. So, you know,
Hey, listen, well, the same job I had at Ole Miss used to pay $65, pays $300 now.
Right.
So if that just tells you the difference, see, in where the economy is and based on what the, you know, it's the same kind of job. So, you know, all that being said, this is the time of the year that these points are discussed, Bojie, because there's no playing on the field, you know. And I think, of course, I don't know about you, but I really used to get excited about this time of year. I mean, I couldn't wait to the convention. I'd get there and stay up 24, 48 hours and talk to
everybody. Explain this convention to me, because this is something I had never heard of until you mentioned it 3 days ago.
Oh, man. I mean, we have the national convention in. We've been to San Francisco. We've been to New York, Chicago, Miami, Atlanta. I've been there, Dallas.
It's in San Antonio this year, Max. In San Antonio.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, you know, I used to have a daughter lived out there.
Are you going, Bochy?
This year, no, I'm not going. Now, if I were going to get back into coaching, yes, I would be out there with my shingle
Look, even if you don't get a job, and Bojie, I know you've been through this, but you get the chance to make contacts, and after all, you know, you take a pocket full of resumes of where you've been, what you've done, and at least you try to get it in the hands of the people who eventually can make a decision. But at the level Bojie and I worked, we were kind of down on the totem pole. As far as hiring is concerned, our jobs would come along many times after signing day in February, sometimes in January, depending on the need and depending on who you know, to try to get there.
Yeah, and one thing about the convention, Max, and of course you and I have been on both ends of this spectrum, is if you go out there with a job, everybody you know that doesn't have a job is coming to you saying, hey, can you get me into your boss? Can you get
exactly
me into your
right.
boss?
Very true. But you know what? Those were fun times. Mm-hmm. And I go back and think, I say, I don't remember how I could stand up for 24 or 36 hours at a time.
Right.
But we stood on that floor and talked. I can't even remember how many people we talked to.
Yep.
But that was, you know, that was the way you did it in those days.
Yep.
Unlike. All right, let's quickly. I know got about 10 minutes left, but I want to talk to you about a couple of ball games. Let's talk about Auburn and Purdue. They're playing in the Music City Bowl in Nashville. Auburn's a 3-point favorite, about a 3.5-point. When the lines first came out, that may change a little bit. Can Auburn get it together? I don't want to hear this thing about, well, we didn't want to be there anyway, like I heard last year when they played Central Florida. Mm-hmm. Purdue had a pretty good year. They beat Ohio State by 3 touchdowns. They ended up being of course, they lost to Missouri. That's another one at home. So, we got some background on them a little bit. How does Auburn do, in your opinion, against Purdue?
I think it's going to be a very good football game because when you look at Purdue, yes, they're only 6-6, but if you look at a couple of their losses, you mentioned Missouri. They lost that on the last play of the game. Northwestern, yep. They pretty much lost on the last play of the game. when they inexplicably rushed the roughed the passer on fourth down, it wasn't rough, but it was unnecessary roughness on the running back, kept them from getting the ball back and kicking a game-winning field goal. And so this Purdue team, they are 6-6, but they could very easily be a 9-3 football team. I think they're much better than people just give them credit for if they just glance at their schedule and everything. Of course, we saw what they were capable of doing against Ohio State. They've got Rondell Moore, who I think is one of the most exciting players in America, a little receiver outside, came out of Louisville, and Jeff Brom went into his hometown and plucked him out of there. And I think Auburn's going to have a lot of trouble containing him. He can score running the ball. He can score catching. He's even thrown a touchdown pass this season. Auburn, I think, and I agree with you, I don't want any team. And it goes back even to Alabama and when Utah beat them, when they lost to Oklahoma. Oh, well, you know, we just couldn't get up for that game. Well, if you can't get up for the game, just stay at home. You know,
don't go. That's
yeah,
right. I agree.
Send somebody that's going to be up for the game. And there's rumor that Jarrett Stidham may take the Will Grier route and not play in the bowl game. But as of right now, he's scheduled to play. This Auburn team, again, they are just a rudderless ship right now, Mac. There's no other way to describe it. I know that they're a slight favorite going into this game. Mike Bernard's interested to see how the public money starts coming in on this game to see if Purdue closes that gap. Personally, I think this is going to be a statement game for Purdue. I think they're really happy that they were able to hang on to Jeff Brom, and I think Purdue's going to win the football game.
Bogey, all of that being said, does the outcome of this game mean anything to Auburn? Can that affect anything else from where we are right now? Or if they end up losing, do we just say, well, now we know for a fact this year was completely for naught, it was a complete dumpster fire. Let's move on to next year and get it over with.
I think it's a let's move on to next year. And just the only way that anything could happen, and when we say anything, we're talking about, you know, Gus leaving. The only way anything like that could happen, and Max, you and I both remember this about 20-something years ago when John Malkovich, he lost his job when Texas just laid down in the Big 12 championship game. And that was horrendous. You know, barring that or some type of – and I don't think this is going to happen, but, you know, some type of free-for-all fight where, you know, the Auburn team just gets out of control and start – and there's a big brouhaha, you know, like they had over in the Egg Bowl. I don't think if – bar something like that or some, you know, phenomenal blowout by Purdue, I don't think anything's going to happen. I think Auburn probably loses this game by anywhere from 7 to 12 points, and they say, oh, well, you know, now everything – we're settled for next year. As Gus says, you know, the future's bright, and next year is our year, so that's where we are.
One more question about the Auburn thing. What are they going to do for a quarterback situation?
Well, you've got Bo Nix, who's just won
as
his
freshman,
as
sure.
a freshman, just won his second straight Alabama high school championship. His father, of course, Patrick Nix, got record-setting quarterback at Auburn, and actually came in off the bench for Stan White and led Auburn to a victory over Alabama back in 1996, I believe it was, down in Auburn. And you know, good legacy. This kid's been developed by his dad. His dad is a great quarterback coach. His grandfather was a great coach at developing quarterbacks. And I hate to say this, but Auburn has not developed a quarterback since Gus Malzahn has been there, since back when he was offensive coordinator. They've not developed one. Every quarterback that he has had that's played two consecutive years, and he's only had two of those, but each year those numbers have dropped. You know, I just hope they don't screw the kid up, to be honest with you.
Well, go ahead, Max.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I was just waiting you finish on that. The only one that they made an effort to, and we know what kind of ending that would have, was Jeremy Johnson out of Montgomery.
Yeah.
They tried that, and that never worked from day one. Cam Newton, the guys that really did a good job of transfer. And my last question to you about that was it a major disappointment that they didn't get Kelly Bryant? Because he fit that same category of coming in and taking over a football team that probably he could have made a difference in.
Kelly Bryant would have definitely made a difference at Auburn, but I think Kelly Bryant's a pretty bright young man. I think he came down, looked around Auburn. He probably liked the players, liked what he saw as far as facilities and everything. But, Max, there's no other way to put it. There's just a bad vibe around Gus Malzahn right now.
It is. That is so true. Mm-hmm. So true. And I don't know how – I'm not saying it's completely – it cannot be repaired, but it's close. Because the history has already been laid out on the way mm-hmm. he handles quarterbacks, i.e. assistant coaches or whomever.
And I don't think – I think you're right, Max. I don't think it has anything to do with strategy or schemes on the field as much as it is – his social compromise that he seems to have, where he just cannot connect with anybody. He's so abrasive. Bogey, I don't know if you get the same vibe. You're way closer to him, and I've never met the guy or been around him, but just watching his mannerisms and stuff, it just seems like he's hard to get along with.
He is the most, and Max, you and I've been around a lot of coaches. You and I've been paranoid at times about things, but he is the most paranoid coach that I have ever been around, and he's not been that way to me. There's no reason, for him to be that way to me. But I'll give you an example. I'm not going to use any names, but there was a former offensive lineman. If you Google some stuff, you can probably figure out who this is. Former offensive lineman, All-American, played 7 or 8 years in the NFL, was coaching the offensive line up at Virginia Tech several years ago under Frank Beamer. He's, of course, Auburn graduate, All-Americans, got his plaque up in the hallways and everything else. He was down at his lake house at Lake Martin, wanted to come by and watch spring practice one day. Now, again, Auburn and Virginia Tech are not on each other's schedules at all, And, was basically told that, we'd just rather you not do that. Now, Max, you and I both know that is a practice that has been going on as long as football is being played. And I think the big thing with Gus is that, the fan base is important, no doubt about it. But a lot of time your fan base is influenced by what the former players think. And I think we saw a lot of that, even going back to Bill Curry at Alabama, Max. A lot of the bad vibes that the Alabama fans gave Bill Curry came from the former Alabama players, kind of the old guard, so to speak. And that, I think that's what you got a lot with Gus Malzahn at Auburn. I think you've got a lot of old-school players, and they're not going to come out and publicly dog Gus Malzahn. They're not going to do it. But just in private, they're going to sit back and rub their chins, and all their friends are going to say, so-and-so and so-and-so, they don't think he's the guy to get the job done. And I think that's what you have at Auburn under Gus, because Gus has pushed these former guys away. He has not brought them into the circle. He's pushed them away.
You go back and look, and the thing that just resonates with me so much, that contract did not come out of the athletic department. That came out of the president's office, because Jay Jacobs had already gone to Florida. He'd retired, and gone to Florida with Scott Strickland. Then the other side of that, the new coach, Green, had not been hired at that particular time, and it was rumored that Gus was going to Arkansas. And for a magnitude, of course, that was Jimmy Sexton that built the contract. I don't think Gus just went along for the ride, I'm sure, and I don't blame him for that. But that was a contract that not only did set his retirement, it set his kids and his grandkids' retirement.
Oh, yeah. And Alan Green, the athletic director, and I don't know if you've ever met Alan Green. This is one sharp guy. Notre Dame guy, played baseball at Notre Dame, graduate of Notre Dame, very sharp guy. He came in, when he actually put his eyes on this contract, I've heard that he just shook his head. And he said, who would do this? Because it was so lopsided in Gus's favor. And I don't blame Gus or Jimmy Sexton.
They
didn't hold a gun to anybody's head. They negotiated, so to speak, and threatened, but they didn't hold a gun to anyone's head. But when he came in and looked at this contract, he was like, oh my goodness, how are we into this thing? And the crazy thing is Allen Green has done a great job. Now, I talked earlier about the players. He wanted to know why some of the players were, you know, not really around the program like they were at Notre Dame and even Ole Miss, some of the other places that he's been. And he started a reunion type deal above and beyond what the players do. He invited the former players back to certain games. Had lunch set up in an indoor facility, and of course gave them all tickets. And he's doing everything he can to regenerate that that goodwill amongst the former players. But the bad thing about it is, I don't even know if with Allen Green even doing it, if Gus is going to see the benefit in that. And frankly, I don't know if Gus is going to be there long enough to see any benefit from it.
Could very well be. Hey, Bo, you're up against the break, buddy. Thank you as always. Great information. Share that to our listeners. We'll do it again first of next week.
Sounds good, Max. Take care. See you, Sam.
Yeah, boy. Have a good week.
Uh-huh. Bye.